Okay, good morning. We're continuing in Sefer Yeshua. We're closing in on the topic of Yiftach. We're on Perek Yud Beis. We've already moved ahead to Pasuk Vav. We're in the middle of an interesting discussion about the Shiboles and Siboles litmus test, where the people from the tribe of Manasseh had been catching the people of Ephraim as they're trying to escape from the bloody war that went on, where 42,000 people of Ephraim were killed. So the test was, they asked them to say Shiboles, which means either a running river or a stalk of grain, and the people of Ephraim said Siboles. They also first asked them, are you an Ephrasi? And they said no. And we discussed yesterday the whole aspect of bread being an illusion. The ability to receive bread is an illusion to the degree that the tzaddik is able to be yesod olam and bring a level of righteousness into the world. And that sustains the world and brings parnassah to the world. And when the Jews are doing what they're supposed to be doing, they're called Ephraim. Ben Yakir Li Ephraim, it's the precious Yokor Ephraim. And Yokor has the same letters as carry and rake. And a person can be an empty one and he can be filled with immorality. On the other hand, if he's Yokor, if he's beloved and to Hashem, it's because he shows restraint in this area. Discussed all those allusions to the idea of Beis Lechem is the house of bread, and Rachel was buried in Ephras on the way to Beis Lechem. So it's all the ideas of morality, and that's what the whole test had been during the times of the Shoftim, is to be moral people. So they asked them, are you an Ephrasi? Are you a moral person? And they said, no. Now, on the one hand, we said that meant to save their lives, but we brought from the Radak that the truth is they had done sins that were in the Nister, hidden sins. Now, what are the most obvious contenders for hidden sins, if not immorality? So, obviously, the people of Ephraim did not live up to that as well. So now we just want to fit in the Shiboles, Siboles part. So I'm going to explain to you a little bit from Lutzado's more mystical writings. And he says, the sod of God's Hanhaga, the secret of God's Hanhaga, of his conduct of the world, is the secret of the letter Shin. The letter Shin. Now, what is so unique about the letter Shin? Well, picture the letter of Shin in your mind. What is it? The letter, when you print it out, the letter of Shin's got three pillars with a base. Correct? Shin. Well, what does that represent? Shin represents the three patriarchs, which represents the three primary midos, the three primary characteristics, which you have on the right side, the right hand, the idea is chesed, kindness, the left side is gvura, and the middle side, we said, is tiferes, or rachamim, Avram, Yitzchak, and Yaakov. And basically, God employs these are the three primary characteristics that God employs. There's other characteristics, but the primary ones are either chesed, giving, gvura, which is control, which is justice, or a blend of the two, which is rachamim, which is mercy, tiferes. And that's God's primary conduct. And when the avos came into the world and displayed this, it brought God's conduct into the world as people were using that, emulating God. So if you're emulating me, I will bring it into the world. So the letter shin is symbolic of the three patriarchs and God's manifesting these three levels in our lives in the merit of the three patriarchs and the merit of Jews living like the three patriarchs. And that really sustains the whole world. It's either chesed or gvura or a combination of the two. That's the way the world is. Now, so therefore, that's God. And when we deal with God's majesty in this world, as he attaches to the world, it produces the effect called Shabbos. Because Shabbos is spelled with a shin, and after the shin you get the word bas. And bas is a daughter, it's mystically, it's a reference to this world. And we can understand that a bas is a daughter she receives from the parents, etc. It's got shin, and bas is Shabbos. That really is the way things should be. Now, very interesting now. Now you're going to begin to understand a little bit about the Hebrew alphabet. The letter shin, though, the way it's printed, if the dot's on the right side, it's a shin. If the dot's on the left side, it's a sin. So what does that make a difference? Well, that's all part of what the shin is. And therefore, part of the way that God will conduct himself will depend if it's a shin or a sin. Is the effect of pronunciation will reflect where the strength of the letter is. Is it on the right side? Then it's shin. If it's on the left side, it's a sin. And that is part of God's involvement with this world. So when we're dealing with God, the letter shin with the dot on the right side, then that represents God's kindness, the way he acts with kindness and interfaces with the world. Because that's the right. The right is chesed. If it's a sin, then it's the attribute of justice, of din, of constraint and control. Now it's interesting now, and it's mystical here. You kind of understand why a lot of these things, but so far it makes sense. Now it's a little bit, so he says, now of course you have the sin, the three letter with the left, and the letter samach, circle, are pronounced the same. It means there's certain degrees of similarity, and there is an equivalency, obviously, and he used the example of siboles, where siboles could be spelled sin and then boles, or samach and then boles, and it would be pronounced the same way. But the letters have different meanings mystically, totally, where the idea of the sin, again, this is, you have to accept if he's saying this, is the idea of the mystery of Shabbos, which is a higher level, and the Samach is a lower level. He calls it the 6 days of the week, which is the lower level. Now, if to combine it with one more thing, we know that on the first day of creation, God said, Vayihi Or, let there be light. Now that light, we know, was not a physical light, because Hashem created the sun on the fourth day. So it's a mystical light, a spiritual light. The light of spirituality that God said was so intense and so unbelievable that man, in his present state, is not yet deserving of it. It'll be in the time, at the end of time, man will be able to enjoy that light. So that's light, that's that supernal light beyond what we ever can achieve in this world. It's the light of the other world. And that light became hidden. And then comes the sun on day four, and that's, so to speak, a lower type of light. So the shin represents the ultimate chesed. The ultimate chesed is the chesed of the light we will experience from Hashem in the next world. The lower light, and the best level we can hope well in this world, is the sin, which also stands for the word seichel, which means intelligence. Means making the best use of your neshama. Now, that sin can be spelled seichel. Also, you change a sin for a samach can be sachal, which is foolish. So when the light down here is greatly covered, it brings sichlus, which is stupidity. So you could have a seichel or sachal, depending on a sin or a samach. So again, shin represents Hashem's brilliant light. And that's the ultimate, most powerful aspect of Yom Shekulo Shabbos, the day that is completely Shabbos, which will be the next world. And that's the perfect manifestation of everything, where the shin is totally operating with chesed and connecting it to Klal Yisrael. That will be the next world. In this world, the best we can do is the sin where the light is covered. And the Shabbos in this world connects to the samach, to the sin. And that's the highest level we can reach in this world. Samach represents a complete covering where we don't even manifest the way we should be in this world, and that instead of seichel, intelligence, a higher level in this world, becomes sochel, a lower level, and that's really what golus in this world is all about. Okay, so now you're going to understand a few things. If you accept this, then you can understand Why? Yaakov, what does it say when Yaakov crossed his hands to bless Ephraim and Manasseh? And he gives the better blessing to Ephraim. It says, and Yaakov, sikel es yodov. Sikel, such an unusual word. Sin chaf lamed. Sikel, which is the same letters as seichel. Okay? So what was Yaakov, what was Torah implying with this sikel? Where you see, you're taking the right, switching it, and putting it to the left, as it were. So that's what sikel is, meaning to say that Yosef's job in this world is to be the tzaddik of restraint, and the highest level in this world is with a sin. So the blessing of Ephraim requires restraint, and that's his bracha. That's Ephraim's bracha, which of course Manasseh, as time passed, became jealous of. Because why did Ephraim, the younger one, get this higher bracha? And this is the bracha of Yosef. Yosef's a tzaddik. Tzaddik has to deal with gvura. Gvura is the sin, not the shin. It's the sin. Chesed is the shin, but Yosef is only able to get us to the level of sin. So now, what? Now you have the word siboles, starts with a sin. Sin means you're doing the best you can in this world with the attribute of gvura. It represents complete restraint. Shiboles is the bread. It means the blessings that come because of restraint. And the letter sin represents gvura in its greatest strength down in this world, and it manifests its greatest success. So they said, so pronounce for us the word shiboles. Can you pronounce shiboles? And all they can respond was sibolus, because that's really what Ephraim was only capable of doing. Even the best of Ephraim, because it comes from Yosef, is only capable of sibolus. So that's who you are. We caught who you are. And therefore they killed them all. So in other words, even if you don't totally understand what we're talking about, you can see every word. It's not just perchance why they picked these words. And there's so much mystical connotations behind everything there. And therefore, the idea of Sibola says, this is what a real Ephrasi would be. A real Ephrasi, if you really represent Yosef, right? Well, the greatest man. So we know you couldn't pronounce Shibolas. You can only at best pronounce Sibolas, which is a reflection of the sin, which is the highest level of this world of what Yosef HaTzadik can accomplish. So then what happened is, now, of course, when you killed 42,000, that's also not coincidental. 42,000. So it's interesting, if you recall, many moons ago, in the second chapter of Shoftim, where we were talking about the terrible things the Jewish people were doing.
The Jews? 42,000?
42,000 Jews from Shevet Ephraim. Right? So it discusses when the Jews are not behaving properly. So in Perek Beis, Pasuk Tesvav, verse 15, it says Hashem was upset with them, and he gave them into their enemies. They couldn't stand up against their enemies. And it says, and everywhere where the Jews went, the hand was hoysa bum. And, or no, it was another bum. There's a pasuk there, I have to find it right now, where the proper word should have been ba. The proper, not that pasuk, it's a different pasuk. Proper word should have been ba. They're supposed to go in the way of Hashem, to go in ba, in it. It's just not finding it right now. It's in the second chapter. They didn't go in the derech of Hashem, and it should have said the derech of Hashem to go ba,
yeah,
in it. But instead, it uses the word bum, which means in them, which is not the proper grammar for going on the right path. It should have been, oh, there it is. Perek Beis, Pasuk Chaf Beis. Chaf Beis. Chapter 2, verse 22. It says, so Hashem will not allow all the non-Jews to get chased out. It says, Laman Naso's bum, in order to test the Jewish people, are they going to guard the Derech Hashem? Loleches bum. Which is not correct Hebrew. It should have been Loleches ba. We mentioned it that time.
Yes, we did.
The end of Pasuk Chav Beis. Should say Loleches ba. What's the bum? So we said, bum is the gematria 42. Beis is 2. Mem is 40. That's 42. What's so special about 42? The Jews, when they traveled in the desert, they traveled 42 stops. In Parshas Matos, when it lists all the places they stopped, it was 42 stops. What does that mean? So 42 represents the Jewish people's purpose in this world, to be nosea mi makom l'makom, to travel from place to place. In other words, in our lives, there's like symbolically 42 stops. There's a journey. You start the journey. You start it, you know, leaving Mitzrayim, you want to end in Eretz Yisrael. That really is your life. The 40-year period that the Jews traveled, that really was our lives. Really was our lives. And you stop at certain places because that's where there's certain things we're meant to accomplish. So the derech that they're supposed to go, bum, that's the path. The path of a Jew isn't one little challenge in life. It's 42 challenges in life. Because if you're wondering, why does Hashem keep bothering me? Because that's another stop over. To stop over and to grow, right? And that's where you find another place, you find the Yetzirah, gets in the way, you have to stop, you have to overcome it, and then we move on in life. We always have these critical stopping places. And that's where a Jew is supposed to live, to go in the way of bum, 42. And certainly Yosef has the righteousness to be able to overcome the Yetzirah, to have the restraint. And if the people of Ephraim didn't, so therefore they were punished with 42,000 for the number 42, which is the way that they did not go. So that is number 42 is not a small thing, and you'll see 42 comes again. We'll see in this morning's Parsha class on Tuesday, today, where you'll be able to listen online or see on Kosher Tube. We're gonna do the word bum again, because the word bum is found in Parsha's bow, which will all play into that. But that's already a Parsha class, we're not gonna go there. Okay, moving on to Pasuk Zion now. Yes, sir.
Single observation. This is very reminiscent of the blessing on Yaakov and Esau when it was reversed as well. The blessing on Ephraim and Menashe. Also a reverse blessing.
Yeah, you find where the younger one is able to go ahead of the older one. And that's a common theme in the book of Bereishis.
Yeah.
Where the younger one gets and not the older one.
The better blessing.
Yep.
And today in Israel, they still have people that cannot pronounce.
There used to be in Europe, I think in Lithuania, there were Jews who couldn't pronounce their shins.
Yeah.
They pronounced them as sins.
Yeah.
That's just, so that happened even then.
Yeah.
Could be, I don't know. All right, Pasuk Zion. So now we conclude one last Pasuk about Yiftach. So now I got to pause. Okay, and I knew I had to do one more thing. So now we got to take it back to the Neder. Yeah. We got to take it back. Let's just do one more pasuk. Just finish up this idea. All right, Zion. Vayishpoit Yiftach es Yisrael. Yiftach judged the Jewish people. Sheish shanim, 6 years. It was a shofet for 6 years, and many say part of that 6 years was during the time when the Bnei Amon were giving troubles for the Jews. Because we know when he first accepted to be the leader, first he negotiated with them. So we don't know, according to many of the historians, it took a couple of years till he finally had the war. So really, real tranquility for him was maybe just 2 years even. But 6 years he was the leader. Okay. Vayomas Yiftach HaGiladi, and Yiftach from Gilad died. Vayikaver, and he was buried, and instead by every other shovet, it names a city. Here it's just a specific city. Here it says Be'are Gilad, in the cities of Gilad. How do you bury someone in the cities of Gilad? So we said Hashem punished him with leprosy and different body. He loses a limb in different parts. And we'll see exactly, you know, what's the idea of losing limbs in every part. One second. Let's just find it here in the Parshios Sefer. Where is this? I had it over here. I read that they brought down that it could be, you know, part of the intent. Now, you figure the guy could have left the limb in the same city.
Yeah.
So, you know, so your body parts are falling out. Leave a limb in the same city, so eventually be all buried in one place.
Right.
You know, you want to have one, you know, body part, you know, buried in. Let's say you went to a hospital and get yourself amputated in one city, and get yourself amputated in another city, and then get buried in another city. Doesn't really seem to make a lot of sense. So it could be that since at the end of the day, let's think, what did Gilad leave over in his life? What was his What was his legacy? Very little. He only had one daughter. What happened with the one daughter? Either she was killed, or she was left in a self-imposed singular monastery. So he really didn't leave any legacy anywhere. So he felt better. I'll leave one body part in this city, one body part in this city, one body part in this city. At least I'll spread my legacy around. Here is buried his leg. Here is buried another leg. Here is buried an arm. So like little little graves, so that people know, you know, so he kind of will spread himself around, as it were. I remember reading it yesterday. I remember marking it somewhere. I can't remember where I put it. But that's very interesting. That's what he was hoping, at least in his death, to have some ability of spreading around, as it were. Okay, within that punishment. Now, let's just notice a couple things over here. So it says he was a shofet over Yisrael. He was a shofet over all of Yisrael. So let's take a similar idea. We'll look at Gidon and see how it's written by him.
He never got to the west side, really, did he?
No, because he lived on the east side.
Yeah, so how could it be all of Israel?
No, I didn't say, how can a leader over all of Israel? Yeah. Well, obviously, since he was so successful in battle, that would be sufficient. In other words, people respected him.
Not the Ephraims.
He just killed them all.
They didn't respect them at all.
There's nothing to argue about, right? But when it talks about times of rulership, I'm just trying to find another example of leadership, and it's just not coming. I have to be better prepared. All right. I don't believe it indicates when there were shoftim. It says how many years there were a shofet. If it mentions there were a shofet over all of Israel, just saying it was a shofet, but not over all of Israel. I'm just trying to find one pasuk that shows that. It's just.
But in this case, they say of all of Israel, which is least plausible,
right?
Because he wasn't.
Right. So anyway. Trying to find anyone over here. Toshar Dvora. Let's try with Ehud maybe. They say Ehud, but we just saw. It says that Moab was subjugated under the hands of Israel, and the land was quiet for 80 years. It doesn't, you know, so okay, he was the shofet, but it doesn't say he was the shofet of all Israel. So it seems since he showed so much brutal strength, he became a leader over all, he ruled over all Jewish people. That seems to happen from that battle. It's just coincidental, I don't know what it means. You know, the word sheish is a double shin, which is intriguing, right-handed double, I don't know what that means. But what I want to talk about is the fact he ruled for 6 years. And what's the significance of ruling for 6 years? As we'll see, as opposed to the next shofet, we're going to learn tomorrow, who ruled for 7 years. And what's between 6 and 7? It's going to become, we'll see the next three are 6, 7, and 8. If I'm not mistaken, 6, 7, 10, and 8. 6, 7, 10, and 8. So the morale explains the significance of 6. 6 represents all the forces that exist that are separated and going in different directions. Because there's really 6 is the shape of a cube. It's like 6 points. You got 4 corners and height and depth, which is like symbolized in this star, isn't it? Right, the Star of David has 6 points. So, you know, you got four directions, and then up and down. That's six. When you shake the lulav, six directions. What does that really mean? Those are the six directions that can scatter. What scatters it all about. And that could just be a never-ending direction. It's going out and further out and further out. We call those forces of pirud, forces of separation. So what combines those six? And that's also the idea of the 6 days of the week. Every day you're running in a different direction. So what combines them? What gives a limitation and an inward focus that the six, instead of just scattering all about, is focused to form one unit? That's Shabbos. It's the seventh day of the week. Interesting. You have a lot of sixes. You have 600,000 Jews, Jewish root souls, which is certainly all over the place. And what's the connection? You have to have the ability to connect all the Jews together. You have to have that seventh point is like the center point in the middle that everything can focus in on. In which you can go in all different directions, or you can focus them all in. All the directions can focus in one. You need a focal point. Shabbos is a focal point. There's a lot of focal points in life. There's 12 Shvatim, which represents two sixes. You know, it's like Sheish twice. Sheish is Shin Shin. It's like, you know, a Shin and a Shin. So it's six. Six and six is 12. Shema Yisrael has how many words? Six. But it needs at the end, Shema Yisrael, Hashem, Elokeinu, Hashem, Echad, one, unity. You have to unify the six directions. So six is a very non-unifying number. You understand? Because 6 days of the week, everything goes in different directions. The seventh unifies it. So how many years did Yiftach rule?
Six
years, which means he was not successful in unifying the Jewish people. He was not successful in unifying the Jewish people. He thought the way of, you know, murdering 42,000 people, that was really operating with Yosef's Mida of strict justice imposed upon other people as well. You may have ruled over them, but you didn't unify them. And therefore, measure for measure, since he couldn't unify them, therefore, he was buried in a not unified way. There is a mila to being buried in one place. At least you're unified. So he didn't unify the Jewish people, so he was not unified in his life.
Was he buried in six cities?
Whatever, it could be six. I don't know how many cities. I don't know how many cities. It doesn't say. But he wasn't unified in his burial. And Yiftach really was a failured form of Yosef. He's trying to be the tzaddik of Yosef. A real tzaddik is able to do what? Yosef, what did Rachel say when Yosef was born? Hashem osaf escher posi. Hashem gathered together my shame. Yosef also comes from asof, to gather together. The dream with the brothers was, we're bundling grain. Bundling it together. Right? That was the whole dream. So tzaddik is able to gather and restrain himself and collect himself together. That's the perfect Yosef. But Yiftach he scattered the people, he didn't unify them, and ultimately died as a person who wasn't scattered. And now I see where it was. It was the Radak? One second. Well, that's a different thing over there. Not over there. It was the Ralbag. Ah, the Ralbag was what I was looking for. That's the one who says that he was buried in different cities. He says, since he didn't leave any children behind him in his name, therefore he commanded he should be buried in different cities in Gilad, Ktsaspo, some of his body parts here, some over there, Kdeshielo, Zecher, Ba'osam, Akomos, Shehitzel, Miyad, Melech, B'nei Amon, to have memories that he was one who saved them from Amon. So it's the Ralbag who says that.
We have that tradition that we're not allowed to spread parts of
burial. No, but if he dies, if you amputate in one place, you bury where it's amputated.
Yeah, one place, but how come he gave
so then he went to another place, whatever, it could be 6 months later, another body part fell off in another city. So he could have purposely gone to different cities, and therefore when the body part had to be taken away, it was put over there.
So this is a halakhic thing to be buried all in one place, or is it?
It's preferable to be buried in one place. But what do you do if they have to amputate a leg, chas v'shal? And you're a young man, you're going to live another 40 years. Okay, what if you decide to move to another city?
Yeah, that's true.
So you got to stay in that city for the rest of life where they amputated a body part and they buried it?
Yeah,
doesn't seem to make sense.
No.
Yeah.
Didn't this happen also to Eliyahu Cohen? That he died like that too?
No, Eliyahu Cohen died by falling back on his chair and breaking his spine. That's how Eli died. Not with tzaras, not with his body parts spread all over the place.
So he was not punished because of all this?
Eli was punished, but not for these things. Punished for different things. But he wasn't punished in a similar way. Eli was a much bigger tzaddik than Yiftach was.
The commentary said that Yiftach requested that the bear.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was his own.
Because he made sure to go to different cities to where the limbs were falling off. He could have stayed in one place. Yeah. You're a leper. Stay in one place. Yeah. Again, that whole idea of the leper, that, you know, a leper is separated from society, right? So it also doesn't unify. A leper cannot unify society. So his end was very bitter. It was a very bitter ending for him. Okay, so there's one last thing to discuss. We have to, now with all this in mind, we go back to the vow. Okay, now you see that he really did some terrible things, Yiftach, in his life. So now we're going to come back to the vow. And there's a very important medrash that discusses a lot. And the whole thing, again, why didn't Yiftach find the ultimate solution? Couldn't he have found a way to get his daughter out? It's so he really vowed against what it says in the Torah. You don't kill your own daughter. If you make a vow, I make a vow, I will eat treif. It's nullified right away. You can't make such a vow. You're making a vow that he says, I'm going to kill my daughter. There's no such vow. And even if there is, you know, there'd be a way to get out of these vows. So the Medrash says, you know, that the foolishness, the efforts of the fool just wear himself out. That's a pasuk in Kayalas. So he says, that's Yiftach. And the pasuk continues and says, who didn't know how to go to the city, which says that he didn't go to Pinchas to try to get his vow nullified. And that's, he didn't go to Pinchas. And that's Yiftach. And he says, Ani Rosh V'Katzin LiYisrael. I'm a leader of the Jewish people. Eilech Eitzel Pinchas. I'm going to lower myself and go to Pinchas. And what did Pinchas say? Says the Medrash. Pinchas said, Ani Kohen Gadol. Ben Kohen Gadol. I'm a high priest, the son of a high priest. Eilech Eitzel Amoritz. I'm going to go to an ignoramus. Right? So another Medrash says, this one, you know, held of his greatness, and this one held of his greatness, and woe to the greatness that buries its owner. Right? Oy la l'gdula shel olam eina gorem es tova. Woe to people's greatness who don't bring goodness to them, because they all were thinking of their greatness. And another Medrash says the same thing. You know, between the two of them, one was the military political leader, one was the spiritual leader. You have two big leaders. So it says, between the two of them, this young girl was lost. You know, it's like you have two midwives fighting over who's going to deliver the baby, and while they're fighting, the baby comes out and dies. Same thing. And they were both punished, says the Medrash. Yiftach was punished that his body parts fell apart in different parts of Menashe. And that we already discussed. And Pinchas, what happened is he lost his Ruach HaKodesh for a very long period of time. That's the punishment he had. Now, it's
the first time we see that Pinchas is being actually...
Oh, we're going to see. We're not finished with Pinchas. We're not finished with Pinchas. Okay. He's going to get a lot of reprimand now.
But does Pinchas know because the daughter went down to Shiloh?
We'll see. We're going to explain. Just wait. We have to explain. This is very difficult Midrash to understand. It puts Yiftach and Pinchas in very poor light over here.
No question.
Now there's a Midrash Tanchuma goes further and adds a lot more to the story and says, since he wanted... Now this Midrash is going along the lines to say he wanted to kill her. So since he wanted to kill her, she starts crying before him. And the daughter says, Father, I went out to you with joy and you want to slaughter me. You know, does it say in your Torah that Jews sacrifice people? Right? It doesn't say that a person sacrifices. It says, Adam ki yakri mekem korban. When a person gives a korban, that's from a behemoth, from an animal, not from a person. She's trying to say, you know, this shouldn't apply. He says, well, listen, daughter, you know, whatever came out of my mouth, I said it should be an ola. So what's going to be? People make vows and you don't keep your vows? So she said, yeah, Yaakov made a vow. And he said, whatever you give me, I will give a tenth away. Hashem gave him 12 children. Did he give away a tenth of his 12 children? Did he kill any of his 12 children?
How does that apply to...
Yaakov said, whatever you bless me with, I will give a tenth to you.
It didn't apply to children.
It said whatever. It said, kol asher titein li. Wow. Everything you give to me, I'll give a tenth. So did Yaakov sacrifice a tenth of his children? No. Right? Chana said, God, you know, also I will give, if you give me a child, I will give you to Hashem. He didn't kill the child. But still in all, didn't help. He didn't listen. And he said, I don't have a way out of this.
But didn't we say for a boy that you...
I understand. Okay.
That's how you do
so, you know, that's his answer. I mean, listen, you know, I understand. But at the end of the day, it just doesn't make any sense, right? I mean... I'm just saying, you know, he's using his logic, but at the end of the day, you don't kill a Jewish child. You can use all the crooked logic you want. You don't kill your Jewish child.
Well,
Yaakov didn't kill his Jewish child. Chana didn't kill her Jewish child.
Did we establish that he killed his daughter?
Okay, yeah, you want to be an ignorant and say, well, listen, a son you can dedicate to Hashem and a daughter not that we have to kill her. You know, it's like...
No, not only that way.
He's using a logic, but it's yeah. Totally false.
But also the daughter was the one who encouraged him to keep the vow.
According to some...
Well, that's what we read earlier.
I understand, but the Midrash is telling you, you know, she, you know... You see, even from the Psukim, you see she goes to the Sanhedrin to try to nullify the vow. So it's, you know, it's questionable. We don't know at the end of the day. We don't know at the end of the day. Anyway, then there's another interesting thing.
He ruined her life a minimum.
Yes, yes.
Or he killed her.
So Gomorrah and Brachah says another thing interesting. You know, who brings a verse in Qohelet? Who's the wise one who can understand these things? Hashem is the only one who knows how to make peace between two tzaddikim. Because there was a similar conflict later on in Jewish history between Chizkiyahu HaMelech and Yeshaya the Navi. And Chizkiyahu was sick. And Yeshaya should have visited him and told him to do tshuva. So what did Chizkiyahu say? He says, listen, let Yeshaya come to me. I'm the prophet. Didn't we find by Eliyahu and Achav that he said Achav should come to him? That was Chizkiyahu. Chizkiyahu said, I'm the king, let Yeshaya come to me, because Eliyahu went and visited Yerovam Achav. Then Yeshaya said, let Chizkiyahu come to me. We find the king Yehoram, the son of Achav, went to Elisha. So he wanted to go. So what happened? Hashem intervened and caused sufferings that made Chizkiyah sick and everything and suffered. So Yeshaya to visit him as a mitzvah of Bikur Cholim. He should have reprimanded him. He said, I don't want to reprimand. He should come to me. Okay, I'll make him sick. You guys will have to get together. So you see that Hashem intervened in a way to bring two stubborn leaders together. But you don't see Hashem intervening over here. He could have found a way to bring Yiftach. In other words, the Medrash is saying, if Hashem wants two people to get together, he'll find a way to get the two together. So he gets the two together, but he does not get these two together. So let's just do one more Medrash. It's unbelievable. So when that same Medrash considers and says, well, since she saw he didn't hear her, she says, listen, God, listen, my father, let me go to the Beis Din and see what I can do. Give me 2 months. We explain it means to go to the Beis Din. So she went to the Beis Din, right? She said, let me descend to the mountains, right? She went to the Beis Din. So she went to the Beis Din and she went to them and the Medrash says, and they couldn't find an opening for Yiftach. And they couldn't find a way to free her. Why? Ba'avon olsen sheshachat mishevet Ephraim. Because of the sin of the fact that he slaughtered 42,000 people in Shevet Ephraim. She had 2 months, right? And what it seems that the storyline must be that in those 2 months,
he was doing this.
It was still, even though the story in the order of the text says she was first put away and then he fought with Ephraim. But it could be very well, either God knew he was going to do that, or it already happened. But either way, so therefore, the Medrash concludes, after bringing a number of psukim, it says, Shehelim HaKadosh Baruch Hu Memes Halacha, Hashem hid from them the law. So Yimtzu Pesach L'Hatzel HaSinder, that they wouldn't find an opening to help him out. And all of his shakti went and he slaughtered her. So it's very interesting. So now we're seeing that the part of the next story where he killed the 42,000, you know, you want God to help you out, you gotta be a mensch. And since he kills 42,000 people mercilessly, Hashem will kill the most important thing to you. Now, so even though she went to the Beis Din, Hashem can cause, and we'll have to finish a little bit more tomorrow, Hashem can cause to make the Beis Din forget laws. And we'll explain why that happens. Then everything else will become clear. So you see that Hashem, you know, was not disposed to want to help them out because of the fact that so many people died under those circumstances. Well, we'll have to wrap this up tomorrow and hopefully get on with Shimshon.